Hey, everybody, it's Tim Miller from The Bulwark here with Lauren Egan. It's a reporter writing about the Democrats and the opposition, and there was much opposition this weekend. On Saturday, there were 1,300 hands-off rallies of varying sizes across the country. Organizers estimated about 600,000 total participants. For a nonpartisan estimate, the Atlanta police said there were 20,000 in Atlanta. Gives you a sense for what's happening there. They're in big cities. In Boston, there's a big protest focused on Rumeysa Ozturk, the tough student that's got swept off the street for an op-ed in Sylva, North Carolina, small town North Carolina. 300 people came together to oppose the national parks cuts in the community. So it was all different types. And I just wanted to make sure we were covering it and getting a sense for what was out there. And so, Lauren, at the top, what did you make of what we saw this weekend?
Yeah, I think, one organizer texted me and said the opposition is alive and well, and it's reentered the chat. I think there's been a lot of conversation about, like, where is everyone? Like, why are people not marching on the mall like we saw for the first Trump administration? So I think, you know, the anger is there. The energy is clearly there. I thought what was most interesting was not necessarily like the DC rally, because those rallies are always going to be, you know, sure, you're always going to get people to turn out for those. But some of these like smaller cities, like I think like 4,000 people turned out in Huntsville, Alabama, like 5,000 in Portland, Maine. That's kind of impressive. You know, places like Idaho, there was people out there protesting. Places where you are seeing like a lot of federal workers lose their jobs.
Yeah.
You mentioned Atlanta. That's an obvious one. So I think this past week, we've really seen just like this resurgence of energy and frustration and anger really bubble up into the public on the left.
Yeah, I think that's right. As re-entered the chat is about right. I got into a little trouble with some of the commenters, because Lovett and I were discussing this very frustration, like on the pod, I forget if it was last week or 2 weeks ago, just kind of the lack of people in the streets. And we were talking about these upcoming protests, and the way I framed it then is it kind of felt like, you know, this was a first step to start incubating these things. That like in 2017, there was just this like raw emotion. People were like, fuck this. And like, we're in the streets, and like, it was palpable. And like this time, like that, like part of it hasn't really been it, right. And so to me, it felt like these rallies on Saturday were like, you know, sticking the flag down and saying, we are here. We are going to fight this. We're not going to be scared of this. You know, it might take a little bit to like really, really build. I mean, these are big crowds, but, it's not like the massive crowds that you see in like Serbia or lately in some of these places where, you know, that where people like feel very acute about the threats to their rights. But it is the kind of thing that's like, okay, we can build from this. That was at least my sense. Does that feel
right? Yeah, totally. And I think people like after the election, everyone was so demoralized. I mean, think about like people are like, I'm turning the news off. Like, fuck this shit. Like, I can't watch it anymore. And I think now we're starting to see basically like thermostatic backlash is beginning. People have recovered a bit, just from the like immediate shock of it. And some of the organizers were describing it to me as like, this is all about creating muscle memory. And so to your point, like, this isn't just it. It's like, we got to keep showing up. When Trump keeps doing crazy stuff, like we've got to build that sort of energy and habit of getting out there and protesting. But also it's a long 4 years. And so I think there was a sense among organizers, like, okay, right after the election, like we've got to be strategic in how we ask people to spend their time when everyone's so exhausted and so tired. Like, you need a minute to recover and then get ready for all the organizing that we have to do over the next few years.
I want to ask you another, like, more of a strategic question for the organizers, but let's like play a couple clips from the rallies for people who didn't get out to kind of see what the vibe was like.
Hands off! Hands off!
The thing that jumps out to me is, right, this is, I guess, the Bannon flooding the zone with shit thing. Like, you can just tell, like, from the signs and just from the, you know, these types of protests, it's not like George Floyd, right, where it's like there's this rallying point around one thing. Right. It's like we mentioned, it was the national parks for some people. It's the CDC cuts in Georgia. It's fucking people are pissed at Elon. Like, some of it is like felt like old resistance 2017 stuff. There were some funny signs from old ladies calling Trump the C word. You know what I mean? Like, it's a little bit. And so I do wonder for organizers, you know, how are they thinking about like do we want to find one inflection point? Like, is Elon it? Is one of these other actions it? You know, or do you want to kind of get as many people into the game as possible by letting the protests be a little bit kind of amorphous in what exactly they're protesting?
Yeah, I think the goal is definitely to make it a bit more a big tent. Even if you think back to like the Women's March, like obviously that was so focused on women and the pussy hats, like all that kind of stuff. Sure. And like it was a lot of like grounding that and rooting that in like more social issues. And I think now, especially this past week with tariffs and everything and Doge, they feel like you make this big tent by focusing it on pocketbook issues. And that's going to mean different things for different people in different parts of the country. For some people, that might mean, you know, tariffs, for example. For others, it could be that their whole like parks department in Idaho got cut and everyone in this small town is out of a job all of a sudden. So I think the organizers, the lens of their thinking about this is really like, yeah, those pocketbook economic issues, and bring as many people as you possibly can into the tent by making it just about that. And that message will, again, like look different in different parts of the country.
All right. For me, it was a good start. Okay, it's good to see folks out there.
It was a decent week for Dems, you know.
partially because they're starting to organize and get their muscle and get their backbone, and partially because like the administration's fucking things up so bad that they're making it easy for them. So you know, it's a little bit sometimes right. Being lucky is better than being good. I guess I want to talk to you about, you also went to an Elizabeth Warren event over the weekend. I'd like to ask you about that, but since you brought it up, what is your like? In your sources and when you're talking to Dems, are people feeling like they're starting to find their footing after the Cory Booker thing a little bit? Like, are you sensing a change in vibe at all?
Totally. The Cory Booker thing, people were really excited about that, in part because, as we know, the parties had a really hard time breaking through any media environment. Obviously, you know, people saw that. And so there's a lot of, strategists that I was talking to this past week. They were like, finally, someone figured out how to like capture people's attention. It only took a few months of us like trying every trick in the book. So you couple that with obviously the Tuesday night elections, that Wisconsin Supreme Court race, big deal. There's Dems are feeling really good. They're feeling like they've finally kind of like got their mojo back. But to your point about like, it's one of these things where it's like, don't get too excited. Like, yes, Trump is making this easy for you guys, but like, you still have a lot of issues that the party internally has to work out. Yeah. And, you know, some pollsters I was chatting with were like, okay, we really want to like chill. Like, it's great to find some hope. It's great that we're getting some energy back, but like, let's not forget, like, we have a lot of lessons and a lot of things to learn from 2024. And the midterm elections are good. Like, there's a lot of, I think, hope that Democrats can take the House back.
Sure.
But the margins matter. And so a lot of strategists being like, we got to address all these issues that we've been talking about, because it makes a big difference if you win by 5 versus win by 20. That's an entirely different ballgame.
Totally agree with those strategists on that. What was the scene like at the Warren town hall?
I was actually surprised by, it was a really good turnout for Warren. A lot of people were going
where
to the
was
Warren
it
event.
Sorry, I don't think I said that. You're in Tennessee, but where was it?
It was in at this high school in North Nashville, which is a predominantly black part of town, and a lot of people were showing up to the Warren event and then going back downtown to where some of these protests were going on. So busy day for those folks, but it was part of these events that the DNC is doing around the country to sort of like highlight Republicans that are not hosting their own town halls. It kind of felt like for folks there, like it was just like a big, like, you know, security blanket type hug. Like everyone was just like happy to be amongst people who were like, you know, energized in this moment and pissed off at Trump. But I think when I talk about like Democrats needing to figure some things out that they messed up on in 2024, the Warren rally is a really good example of that. It's this working class area of town, but like everyone in there is, you know, wearing their like Vanderbilt alumni t-shirts and carrying their Parnassus like book bags, which are that's the Ann Patchett bookstore here in Nashville. Yeah. So to me, that kind of underscored like there's energy here. People are pumped, but I don't know. You're still just reaching like a ton of, you know, college educated type folks. The party still's got some work to do on that.
What about her message? Like, what was she focused on? Oligarch stuff or something?
Yeah. And for her, it's like a lot of like, you know, CFPB, anti-monopoly type stuff. Yeah. She was leaning really hard into that. Obviously, that's her whole thing. and kind of really going into a bit more of like this populist type message that Warren's obviously like really known for. But, you know, and I chatted with her a bit before before her speech, and we were kind of talking about like, you know, she's like, I really think that this is a time for sort of the Warrenism brand of Democratic politics to have a moment. Like Trump and Elon Musk are making the case for, you know, for this anti-monopoly, anti-oligarch type thing that I've been doing my whole entire career.
All right. Last thing, unrelated to all of that, but I've been very remiss on the pod by not focusing very much on this, on the drama around Allison Riggs in the Supreme Court race down in North Carolina. That's getting like crazier and crazier. You interviewed her for a while, and I want to put a link to the, to that for people who didn't see it here in the description, but, just really quick, like the TLDR and what the situation is with that North Carolina Supreme Court race.
Yeah, basically, it was a really close Supreme Court race in 2024. There was multiple recounts. Allison Riggs, the Democratic candidate, won by not that much, 700 votes, but there were recounts.
Yeah.
And her Republican challenger has just been like going at it in court with her. And it's just like a giant... giant mess. And essentially, you know, when we talk about like elections getting stolen, and when we talk about, you know, just trying to overturn elections, like look no further than in North Carolina, because
yeah, they're looking back now, I guess, at like 60,000 votes. They got to cure them. And, you know, there's just a lot of chicanery happening.
Totally. And when I talked to her, she was kind of like, yes, this is just a local race. It's a local North Carolina race, but everyone in the country should be paying attention to it. This is the argument she's making.
Yeah.
Because she's like, this is the Republican playbook. They are testing it out here in North Carolina. If it is successful, her concern, which I think she's very right to say this, is that it's going to be copied in states in the 2026 elections and beyond. Yeah. And the fact that it's even kind of getting as far as it has is pretty wild.
All right, people. Check out that interview with Allison Riggs. Thank you, Lauren.
Thanks,
have a good one. We'll be talking
soon.